Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, your Seahawks super fan. We got a whole slate of games. Man, these matter a lot. This is about seeding. This is about the playoffs. We've also got a special guest appearance from the one and only your Pod Vader. He's going to help talk his game, a couple other games, because he's got some opinions about a bunch of stuff. And I think he was home alone today, so needed to spend some of that time. Don't worry, he is not going to spoil the new Star Wars for anybody. We've also got a little bit of talk about the big news coming out of Charlotte with the Panthers. Probably going to be having an ownership change soon. And we have Pod chime in on that as well, as he's really plugged in, obviously, to the greater sports community, the 411 Network, all of that. So, yeah. Big show. Before we dive into it, though, let's talk a little bit about our sponsor. We want to thank Harry's Razors for sponsoring this show. I mentioned before, I've been using Harry's Razors for a while now. Let's tell you right now, my favorite thing about them is the fact that they're good enough razors that if you're like me and you're not the best shaver in the world, you know, you kind of do that, you know, after you wipe your face down, scan, you're like, that's not quite crop tight. It probably isn't what they recommend, but I throw a little water on that thing, give it one more once over with the blade. Never cut myself, never tug, never get the razor burn out of it. So I adore it. You know, we've been talking about Harry's for a while. Over 3 million guys have switched, and they do so because it's a great shave at a fair price. The two guys who bought it, Jeff and Andy, regular dudes, probably watching football this weekend, bought a German factory with over 100 years of blade making to make these five-bladed razors because they were tired of, you know, fighting those prices and trying to get in that locked cabinet. It's locked up like Fort Knox. It's half the price of the leading five-blade razor. They sell direct to you, no middleman. So here's what we want you to do. Go online, go to harrys.com/nextfanup right now to claim your free trial. It's a $13 value when you sign up. All you got to do is cover shipping. You're going to get the weighted ergonomic razor handle, those five blades that I love so much with a little lubricating strip, which is probably why I can use it that way, the rich lathering shave gel, and you get a little travel cover, which I just keep on it, just keep it protected at home. So once again, to get your free trial, go to harrys.com/nextfanup right now. That's harrys.com/nextfanup. All right, let's get to the recaps. We're going to start, as always, with the Sunday night show. All right, this is Justin, the Seahawks super fan. We're going to talk the Sunday night game. I'm here with Monty and Kevin. Kevin, literally just minutes ago, this game wrapped up. It was down to the wire, a back-and-forth affair. I'm going to start with you because your team emerged victorious, 20-17. This was a crazy, crazy game, man. Tell me about your experience watching this game.
It was a crazy game, but honestly, I don't feel either team played particularly well. We're fortunate enough to get out of Oakland with the win, but the Cowboys were very sloppy. I felt like the Cowboys' offense, especially the running game, was sort of effective in the first half, but I believe we only scored 10 points in the first half. We had some drives going, but we only mustered 10 points. As for the Raiders, they had some early miscues, in particular the third down conversion to Michael Crabtree on like the second drive. He was wide open, just threw it behind him. So the Raiders got off to a slow start. Cowboys didn't really take advantage. Second half, the Raiders sort of got going, took advantage of the Cowboys' young secondary a bit. And the game got close, 17-10 going into the fourth. The Raiders tied it up. Cowboys took a late lead on an impressive goal line stand by the Raiders. I thought for sure it was going to come back and bite the Cowboys. But fortunately for us, luck was on our side tonight on that last-minute fumble by Derek Carr. And here I am smoking a cigarette on my on my rooftop, victorious.
Yeah.
And
so,
not really understanding how it happened.
Monty, let's go over to you. So we're going to go to that final sequence, right? Dallas just pulled ahead. You got the ball back with like a minute and a half to go. Derek Carr needs to drive the field. What happens next?
Gets bailed out by a pass interference call. I think the broadcast did a good job. I mean, he threw it up there, but one-on-one Crabtree, all he had to do is kind of hit the play into the receiver or to the defender. He's going to get the call. I think Kevin's burying the lead here, though. That biggest, ballsiest move of the day was Garrett going for it twice on fourth down. That fake punt deep in your own end zone, that was a huge play. And then that just BS quarterback sneak with the folded piece of paper. They show that on the TV just now as I'm talking, and there's just such crap. And now I got to sit here, take off the face paint, the spiky shoulder pads, and crawl back
into
bed.
Oh, that was
you in
the
knowing.
I'm sorry, Monty.
Every day, Kevin, every day I'm sitting here in full gear, and that's the worst part is taking that off, and I know it's just a crap call.
You're absolutely right. I did bury the lead because I still haven't really taken in the win because it was a season-saving win for the Cowboys. So I'm sort of still on cloud nine, not really looking at reality. But you're right. That 4th-and-11 fake punt by Garrett. Ooh, I don't think anyone in the world saw that coming. What, we were on our 17-yard line or something. Chris Jones, he's done
balls.
It in the past. Yes. The ball's on Jason Garrett. And he's been criticized in the past for not having any. So huge. And we scored a touchdown on that drive after the fake punt. So definitely the turning point of the game. And then obviously
get back to Justin's question of the drive. Derek Carr has got the first down. There's 31 seconds on the clock. You don't need to dive in like Spider-Man for the touchdown. Have a little bit of awareness and just run for the sideline out of bounds. First and goal from the 3. You don't want to give Dallas 31 seconds to get a field goal anyway, dummy. I mean, have a little awareness. And then for him to stretch out and drop the ball for these stupid touchback penalties or play calls to decide the game. Oh. I'm just super upset right now.
Yeah, Monty, I was super upset I was just pouting on my couch, barely even watching. And then I saw it go out of the end zone, and I just screamed touchback in my living room. Probably woke up my entire apartment complex. But like,
and now I got to take off the face paint and go buy some terrible T-shirt. Everyone knows that Jerome Bettis is my barometer for the worst Hall of Famer. And now I got to wear a T-shirt that says I like Jerome Bettis. I mean, this is probably the worst day of football. Look at it. It's right on TV right now. That's not a first down. The dude is like bending the first down marker towards the ball. And there's space in there. You
them.
Can see the daylight. Come
Monty,
on.
In regards
Colin
to
Smith,
that,
tell him.
The ball was also not in a straight line. It was like crooked. It was not properly spotted. And also they butchered him on the spot even after watching the replay. But yes, I admit that the folded over index card was a little suspect, but.
And his little smirk, like every time he'd make a call against the Raiders, he's got
smirking,
these little smirks.
He was smirking all game though, Monty. He was smirking
Mac
all game. He was just happy for some reason. I don't know. He's having a pleasant Sunday. So
I hope that guy's car breaks down on his way to the airport and the good people of Oakland wipe that smirk off his face.
Wow. Yeah, I mean,
Territor, watch out. Monty's goons are coming after you.
And so if you didn't see it, the game ends. Oakland has the ball. They're down by 3. They're well within field goal range for Giorgio Tavecchio, the dude's money. And so,
he's not. He missed one.
I wouldn't say he's money.
Hey, I will mute you both. You wait your turns. Oakland has the ball. They're getting to the end of the field. They're again well within typical field goal range. We'll say that. I'm watching the win percentage. It goes from like 80% Cowboys to 60% Oakland winning at this point. And then all of a sudden, it does that thing where when you're watching the game tracker online where nothing happens for like 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden I see 99.9% Cowboys. I'm like, what the hell just happened? And yeah, it's that implementation of that stupid rule, which my team has won multiple games because of in the last few years, where if the ball fumbles into the end zone and goes back out the back of the end zone, it's a turnover on the 20. So it goes from basically a 99.9% chance that the Raiders are going to score some kind of points to either tie the game or win it. The game is over on the stupidest rule in the NFL outside of maybe the Dez Bryant catch rule, which reared its ugly head today as well. That has to be devastating for you, Monty, elating for you, Kevin, confusing for all the rest of us for why that's even a stupid rule. That's a huge play that's going to be talked about.
Huge.
I'd say credit where credit's due, though. Jason Garrett doing that fake punt was a huge play, and then even going for it on fourth down for the quarterback sneak was also a huge call. Raiders came out flat. Both of us lost our starting left tackles. You seemed to kind of shut down for a little bit there. At least the defense kept you in check the second half, it felt like, since that injury happened. So I don't know. I just Raiders came out flat again and didn't start playing until the second half, and then had a chance to win at the game, and they just couldn't pull. They're not a good enough team to have 11 penalties, and just
It was a yellow seed today. I think 11 penalties for the Raiders. You said, and probably 9 or 10 for the Cowboys. Yeah, it was sloppy, as I mentioned earlier. The Cowboys' offense wasn't rolling. Dez disappearing act once again. Cole Beasley, one catch. Terrence Williams, 3 catches, all in the first quarter. So
what'd you think of Dez beast mode, though, Kevin? This is your first chance to watch beast mode up. He's fine, right? Everyone's giving him a lot of grief.
He looks pretty good. He looks pretty good. He still looks
fine.
Like he has something left.
Still running over
pass protections, but yeah.
And did you see the stat where they listed like the most missed tackles caused over the last 4 years or whatever, and he's like out of near the top of the list despite not playing last year?
Oh, he's a beast. Fun to watch.
No, he looks like he still had juice in his.
All right, so I'm gonna ask the same question to both of you, but I'm gonna start with you, Monty, and I think your answer is gonna be shorter. Do you have any shot at the playoffs at this point?
No, season's over. So let's get into the mock draft season, next fan up.
All right, Kevin, what is your playoff scenario?
I believe our easiest path is clearly we have to win out. And the Lions have to lose one more game out of the next two. And either the Falcons, Saints, or Panthers need to lose their next two games. And that's interesting because there's a lot of games between those two. I think the Falcons and Saints play each other. The Falcons and Panthers play each other. So it's going to be a juicy last 2 weeks, and hopefully the Cowboys can come out on top.
Well, I hope for the sake of both of our teams, the Falcons lose out. And then you and I can hopefully determine that last wild card spot next week. Kevin, Monty, gentlemen, thank you. Have a good evening.
Salute.
You too, Justin.
Hello, everybody. Special guest appearance here from yours truly, Pod Vader, and I am going to help out Jared and Justin break down the Los Angeles Rams victory 42-7 over the Seattle Seahawks. This game was in Seattle, right, Jared?
Yes, it was. And as the Rams were getting the lead, I kept on thinking to myself, oh, man, the Seahawks are going to come back. But, yeah, I think the Rams had lost like 9 of the last 10 games in Seattle. And prior to this year, almost nobody won there. But yeah, they definitely came through with their biggest win of the season today.
Justin, this game was in Seattle, right?
Yeah. As I look up from my tear-stained latte, that is my familiar skyline. Oh, this hurts a lot. To lose in such embarrassing fashion to your division rival upstart, it's bad.
34-0 at the half. I mean, what happened? I don't know who I should ask first. I guess I'll ask you, Jared, since you were the victor. You get the spoils. How did this happen?
I think the biggest thing is just the battle of the offensive and defensive lines. The Rams won, and I mean, Todd Gurley definitely had a great game. I think he had 150 yards and 4 touchdowns, but he had some huge holes to go through, and I know KJ Wright was out. But yeah, the Rams had gotten away from the run in past weeks, especially last week against the Eagles. So he ran the ball great, and then Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn were just doing a really good job on the defensive line. Russell Wilson didn't have a prayer. I mean, he's asked to do so much with their challenges at running game. So yeah, the Robert Quinn and Aaron Donald just were constantly in the backfield, and then even special teams, Farrell Cooper had a couple really good returns, so the Rams had good field position. But yeah, I think it's definitely the game was won in the trenches.
Yeah, 42-7, Jared Goff completed only 120 yards passing. That is crazy. Now, Justin, we've been talking about this, it seems like, forever. The Seahawks offensive line, I thought it had gotten better, though. But 7 sacks, Russell Wilson had 2 fumbles, 1 lost.
Yeah, It has gotten better, and it has been playing a lot better until this week. And I mean, Jared nailed on the head. This really was a matter of the trenches, and it was won on both sides by the Rams. I mean, the Seahawks defensive line, and you know, I feel like I've been shouting this out, and nobody's been hearing me. The Seahawks defensive line has been struggling this year. People don't realize that there's been no pass rush. There's no pass rush today. Getting pushed around. I mean, you look at, there was late in the game, you know, kind of garbage time of a fourth and inches. And, you know, the Rams don't pick up inches. They pick up 3 yards because they just push the entire pile back. And so Todd Gurley, who, you know, some of that was not just the offensive line. I mean, he put some good moves on people. He was elusive, powerful. But yeah, I mean, he was running through wide open holes all day long. KJ Wright being gone sucks. Bobby Wagner, oh man, I appreciate the fact that he suited up, but he was about 50% out there, and you could tell. I mean, they ran right at him. He was a shell of who he normally is. And then offensively, I mean, yeah, Russell Wilson had no time. He had less than no time. He had like negative time. He had anti-time. That's what kind of time he had. Dwayne Brown had his first bad game as a Seahawk. And that obviously has a lot to do with the fact that it's, you know, just some monsters like Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn on that defensive line. But he had his first legitimately bad game. And so he and the rookie Ethan Pochick, who's been okay, was exposed over and over and over again. Yeah, no shot in this game. And it seemed obvious early on, as much as I hate to say it, because I always felt the Seahawks can come back. It seemed like there wasn't any room for a comeback.
Yeah, Jared. Aaron Donald, 5 tackles, 4 solo, 3 sacks, 2 tackles for loss, 4 quarterback hits. He owned this game.
Yeah, and I don't know if it made in the stat sheet, but he had almost another sack where Russell Wilson just kind of threw it in desperation and ended up being like a 23-yard loss on a fumble. So he could have had a 4 sack. So, yeah, Donald definitely was in the backfield all the time. And I think that's the way to get to Wilson, because a lot of times the edge rushers, if they get to him, he can kind of scramble up the middle. And Wilson did have a couple of good runs, especially in the third quarter. But yeah, when Donald's just collapsing the pocket from the middle, I think that's why he's just so valuable. The quarterback almost has nowhere to run when you get that pressure up the middle. So yeah, definitely it's one of those games where I'm like, man, pay the man Aaron Donald. Our defense would just be nothing without him.
There was a Sean Mannion sighting, 1 for 2 for 4 yards. I mean, was that, did Jared get hurt?
No, just at the end of the game. I think Gurley, after his 4th touchdown, Gurley was out. And then, yeah, sometime in the 4th quarter, Mannion came in. So,
I was just, making sure I'm doing my due diligence. You know,
yes.
I was busy watching another game, so I didn't know exactly what happened.
Yes.
Your Rams, have they clinched? This doesn't clinch the division for them right now, because there's 2 games left and they only have 2 games up on Seattle. Are you guys facing off again, or what's your schedule look like for the rest of the year here, Jared?
They play at Tennessee and then home against the 49ers. So I think they just have to win one of those 2 games to clinch the division.
And what are the playoffs looking like for you, Justin?
It really, really depends on the Falcons. So going into this week, we had the same record as the Falcons. They're currently sitting in the wild card spot because they have the tiebreaker over us. If the Falcons lose tonight, we still have the same record. And then it's just a question of if both the teams win out, the Falcons will have it. If the Seahawks win out and the Falcons lose tonight and one other one, the Seahawks will be in. But that's tough. The Falcons are you know, a little bit up and down, but overall they're playing pretty good football, and they own tiebreakers over everybody. They've beaten like everybody who's in that, like in the hunt column. So I think more likely than not, the Falcons are going to be the wild card. They alongside the Panthers, and my Seahawks will have the first early vacation in a very, very long time.
All right, then let's just jump right into San Francisco beating Tennessee at the last second, 25-23.
You just want to talk Garoppolo.
And Jimmy Garoppolo doing his best Tom Brady impersonation, doing it with, I mean, Tennessee scored with, had the go-ahead score with mere minutes left. I think it was a minute 20, and then Garoppolo does it again, drives his team down and gets the win, 25-23. Garoppolo now 3-0 as a starter. I mean, we just mentioned there's a game that's going to be of importance here with San Francisco against, I forgot if it was the Seahawks or the Rams. I forget which one of the two teams. But oh, San Francisco now going to play the part of spoiler.
I hope so. The bad thing is the Rams provided the only two wins for the 49ers last year, and then they were 2-0 against the Rams and then 0-14 against the rest of the NFL. And then the Thursday night game earlier this year where the Rams held on for dear life to barely beat the 49ers. So, yeah, I'm really hoping that game doesn't mean anything because the 49ers have been playing well with Garoppolo and they have nothing to lose. And of course, they'd want to play spoiler to division rival. So, yeah, I mean, I just saw part of this game because obviously I was more attached to the Rams-Seahawks game. But, yeah, Garoppolo definitely looks good. He doesn't have a whole lot of weapons, but he's looks good in the pocket. He's accurate. Yeah, definitely. I'm kind of surprised that Patriots only got a second-round pick for him, but I guess they didn't have much leverage. But, yeah, I mean, he definitely looks like the real deal.
Well, and because other guys, like other super fans on this podcast, were like, oh, Garoppolo's not worth a first-rounder. He's more than worth a first-rounder. 31 of 43, 381 yards, only one touchdown. And I will have to say, if there is any sort of downside to Garoppolo's play so far, is that he is putting up big numbers, except in the touchdown category. So Jimmy's able to move the team up and down the field, but he's not necessarily able to punch it into the end zone. And I don't know if that's necessarily Jimmy or the weapons that he's forced to throw to. I mean, Marquise Goodwin has been good all year, had 10 catches, 114 yards in this one. Garrett Celek, not Brent Celek.
Right.
Seems to love playing with Jimmy Garoppolo and vice versa. Three catches for 63 yards and the touchdown. Let's move it to Tennessee. Mariota finally had a Mariota game. With two touchdowns, no picks, 241 yards. But they got away by doing that. They got away from the running game. DeMarco Murray only 59 yards on the ground. Derrick Henry only 7 carries for 19 yards. So it seems to me Tennessee is moving away from what actually made them good, and now they're struggling here down the stretch.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, running the ball is what they do. Marcus Mariota, he's a player I still believe in, but he's had a poor year, and you saw some frustrations last week after the loss in his press conference. I think he's finally starting to get a little bit healthier. But, you know, his honestly, I think their best offensive weapons really are those two running backs and Delanie Walker, right? And so, you know, if you're going to have an active tight end, I think you need an active running game. Without those two things, you know, even against at the time 3-10 team, you're not going to come out with a win. You know, they didn't lose just because Jimmy Garoppolo went out and put up, you know, a ton of yardage. You mentioned he only had one touchdown. They were down like 16-0 to start the game. Their offense wasn't clicking. They scored some points kind of in a hurry from like the second quarter into the third quarter. But like other than like a small flurry, they never really moved the ball effectively, and they never looked good. They have to run the ball to be a good team, and if they're not doing it, they're not winning.
I mean, the 49ers on defense, they only had one sack, 5 quarterback hits. Doomerville did not get a sack, had 2 quarterback hits, but he was looking for a sack to join some of the elites in NFL history. I mean, this sort of was, I guess, a game that you can expect out of a struggling team that was 8-5 and a young team that hadn't really won until this guy that they traded for at the trade deadline comes in and finally starts winning some games.
You cannot retroactively go back and talk your way into a first round pick pot. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Is that possible? All right. Well, let's put it this way. I mean, this game, I mean, besides the fact that the Titans now in some desperate trouble, of finding a playoff spot, was really just filler to get to the good stuff. And what I'm going to do for everyone here is I'm going to read the texts that I sent my brother, the more important brother who pushes more important buttons in the middle of the country because he works at a power plant. So these are the texts that I sent to him because he couldn't watch the game. He says, looks like a good game. I'm having to work. That was at 6 o'clock Eastern this evening. I said, that's a shame. It's a nail biter. Gauss just missed the extra point. Rex Burkhead out for the game with a knee injury. Antonio Brown out for the game with a calf injury. 1:55 left. Pats at the 50, two timeouts, and we need a touchdown. Might have scored too soon. 27-24 with 56 seconds. 34 seconds, and Steelers now on the 10 already. They scored. 28 seconds left. BS call in Pat's favor. Touchdown off the board. Fake spike is picked off. Pat's win. That was how that was how the game ended, ladies and gentlemen. And that's how I informed my brother on how that game went. And you heard me right. A BS call in the Pat's favor because Jesse James absolutely scored a touchdown. I don't get it. This is apparently, from what I've read on Twitter, the Dez Bryant rule to a T, but that ball was caught and crossed the plane of the goal line and was a touchdown. There's nothing more to say about that. Like the Steelers got screwed. And as Jim Nance rightfully said, the call was for first place in the conference. I mean, the Patriots lose and they fall to third place. Now the Steelers are in second, tied with, not tied, they're still a game up on the Jaguars, but it's going to be a real interesting end to the season and how all these seeds play out.
That might have been the best play-by-play I've ever heard, by the way. The just be a text message short to like your brother. That was excellent. Yeah, I mean, you said it's BS. You said it's the Dez Bryant rule. Well, that's the same thing. That's redundant. The Dez Bryant rule is BS. If somebody's invoked the Dez Bryant rule, that means that they're invoking screwing over a team. And I don't like the Steelers any more than I like the Patriots. I kind of wish both your teams could have lost today. But my team lost enough for both of them. I was keeping track of that because my game was over. Thanks, Jared. I saw on my fantasy, like, oh, I got a bunch of late points from Ben. Oh, now they're off the board. What the hell just happened? And yeah, I mean, this is as big a call as it gets. If the Patriots lost, like you said, they're the third seed. I think the Steelers are going to win out. The Jaguars' next two games are the 49ers and the Titans. They're probably going to win out. If that call went the other way, you probably don't have a bye. Like, that's how big that call was.
Yeah, I agree. It was, it certainly helped out. Just so everyone knows, I'm going to peel back the curtain. Rob, our Bills super fan, has just dialed in, so we might as well bring him in on this conversation. Might as well just make this a whole podcast. Rob, the Bills did their job. They went out and beat the Dolphins, but then they got screwed over by the refs, and the Patriots got the victory against the Steelers.
Yeah, that's to be completely honest with you, as a Bills fan, like, I could care less. Like, well, I don't think the Bills ever had thoughts of winning the division. However, you want to know what was really cool today? Was that a Gould field goal from 45 yards out to beat the Tennessee Titans. Because that basically assures that the Bills' playoff fates rely on a Week 17 game against Miami. And do you think Jay Cutler's going to give a crap about a Week 17 game against the Buffalo Bills? No, he could care less. Bills are going to break this. Bills are breaking the drought this year, and they're doing it on the road.
It's looking good for the Bills for sure. Just to go back to this Patriots Steelers game, Schefter just tweeted out that Antonio Brown is expected back for the playoffs. He partially tore his left calf muscle. So that was the injury that sent him to the hospital after injuring his calf early in that game against the Patriots. No word yet on the Rex Burkhead injury that was listed as a knee. Usually when we hear a knee injury, that immediately goes to the ACL or MCL. My guess is his season is done. Fortunately, they have that Bills running back, Mike Gillisley, who hasn't suited up for about a month and a half or so.
Yeah, thanks for the fifth round pick, by the way. We appreciate it. Turned into Mike Milano. He's starting for us. He's pretty good. Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because that Bills matchup now next week against the Patriots becomes, and by the way, after looking, I took a sneak peek at the schedule earlier this week for next week. It's pretty bad. So I think the Patriots Bills is actually the number one game of the week.
Rob. It is. It's CBS's game of the week, which I thought was hysterical.
Yeah, it's not good when Patriots Bills is the game of the week, because the Bills are going to Foxborough. When's the last time the Bills won in Foxborough?
Actually, it wasn't that long ago. They won in Foxborough. It was Doug Marrone's last year as the Buffalo Bills head coach. It was a Week 17 game, so it clearly didn't count. But it got him to 9-7, which was like the best record the Bills had it in like 10 years before him. So, you know, that's about it.
Talk to me a little bit about the Bills Dolphins. How'd the Bills get the job done? They got up early, and I saw the Dolphins make a late push, but didn't look like they ever really got close.
No, it's kind of one of those situations where at the first half, I think the Bills were kind of the aggressors. They came out for once. It seemed like they were really doing things for Tyrod Taylor, like kind of moving the offense around him and his style, as opposed to trying to get him to play into Rick Dennison's style of offense that he's ran in the past, which was great. I thought that they were throwing deep passes more frequently in this game, way more frequently, actually, which is kind of fun to see. They were a drop pass from Zay Jones that on a deep ball that he should have caught from really kind of blowing this game open. And in the second half, I mean, yeah, Miami kind of made a little bit of a run back, but it was really just more so as the Bills were like content to run out the clock, and the Dolphins were just going against a prevent defense for the most part. They did get the onside kick, which kind of made things interesting, but literally the next play, Jay Cutler decided to throw his third interception of the game. To Tre'Davious White, who, by the way, Trey White might be my new favorite football player. when it's cold outside, he loves to dance in between plays. He's fantastic, and he's actually good at football. So, you know, that's a plus. But he intercepts the pass, game over. Bills play them in 2 weeks, probably with a playoff spot on the line.
Next week's game that we'll be watching intently will be Seattle-Dallas, as Dallas is still fighting to stay alive. If Dallas wins tonight, obviously that game becomes a little bit more interesting, as both teams will be 8-6 fighting for that playoff spot. The Rams-Tennessee, Rams on the road at Tennessee, West Coast team going East Coast, early kickoff. Fortunately, Tennessee plays in the Central time zone, though, so won't be that bad for them. The Atlanta New Orleans is, I think, the best game by record. Atlanta obviously playing on Monday night, currently at 8-5, New Orleans 10-4. And then, of course, the Patriots Bills game, as we mentioned. Those are the four biggest games of the week. All the other ones are pretty much snoozers. At least Saturday. Well, Minnesota Green Bay Saturday night, that has playoff implications on it. Especially since Minnesota's already clinched the division. Wonder if Minnesota would roll over for Green Bay there. Probably not, huh?
Probably not.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's how you do it. You make a guest appearance and you blow out four super fan battles, or four super fan recaps in a row. Justin, I leave it to whoever else has got some recaps to do, but I am out, ladies and gentlemen. Patriots, once again, get lucky by the refs and win a nail biter that they had no business winning. And now the road to the Super Bowl goes through Foxborough. All right, perfect. Rob, did you have more you wanted to add to the Bills game?
No, I just think that the fact that the road to the Super Bowl going through Foxborough, it just brings a tear to a glass eye, and I can't wait till Bill Belichick retires.
Excellent. All right, there you go, Justin. More breaking news. Even as I try to get away, Justin, I can't. Apparently, the report coming out now, Jerry Richardson is going to put the Carolina Panthers up for sale after the damning report about workplace behavior by the owner. This is huge. An owner putting up a team for sale in the NFL these days. First of all, the team's not going to go for cheap.
No, you know what, though? I expected this. The way kind of the culture is, you know, you're hearing these reports everywhere, you know, in all industries, especially entertainment industries, including sports, including four-letter networks. I mean, there's a lot of this going around, and there's very, very little patience for this right now. You know, I was reading a little bit about it earlier today, and, you know, there seems to be a number of settlements over the years involving Jerry Richardson. I was wondering if we were going to start to hear about the owners voting to remove him because they do have the power to do so. I'm willing to bet that this is based on that expectation that they could and would do so. But yeah, that's huge. That's an owner of a successful NFL franchise being forced to give it up. This issue is not going away in any walk of life.
I will be curious to find out how soon this issue starts affecting the athletes. This is something that I've been talking about in the Slack group for a while. I haven't really said it publicly, but having been around athletes and having been at the Four Letter Network and the locker room atmosphere that exists there, I'm waiting for this thing to really blow up. I really believe that we're just not going to see any men on television for much longer. It's just, it's certainly not in sports because it is rampant and it goes, you know, without report. Now, at the same time, as I mentioned on the Thursday show, something doesn't seem right with what happened at the NFL Network and their latest suspensions. And there was an article that was posted from the New York Times, which mentioned a friend of mine and the behavior that he participated in that isn't technically sexual harassment. It was just really, I don't even know what to call it. A misjudgment, I think, is the way that he was quoted in the article as saying. A really bad misjudgment. So I don't know. I think some of it is getting pushed because, as you mentioned, the patience is very short with this at this particular time in our society. But we also have to be careful that we're not just, you know, I mean, people are innocent before they're proven guilty.
I mean, that's true. However, you know, most of these things, you know, like rumors about stuff that goes on behind the scene have existed forever, right? Usually if stuff's going on, people know about it. When reports come out, they're typically vetted. There's typically some truth there, even if it's not enough to, you know, convict somebody in a court of law. Usually if somebody's going to report on something, they've done some fact checking and they found a lot of the information verifiable. I agree. I think we're in a situation though where there are some people who you're hearing reports about who are, I'll just be honest, legitimate monsters, right? And I think that there's a chance that that will negatively influence people who just have had lapses of judgment, who have just been, you know, basically brought up from a career standpoint in an environment like that. Who, you know, aren't the same as these people who, you know, have multiple egregious violations over the years. And I think it's really hard to parse that right now because there's kind of a lack of patience on those issues. Like, you know, I think it's very likely if a report comes out, there's probably some credibility behind it because it's been fact checked. However, I don't think all reports are the same, and we're treating all the people who are being reported on like they're the same. And there's a broad range of, you know, how bad and how malicious some of the stuff was. And so hopefully we can exercise at least some caution so that we get the facts right.
Right. Because the court of public opinion is ultimately going to reign. And Rob, I don't necessarily want to get too much into specifics on the recap show, but since we did have the breaking news that was related to the Carolina Panthers, I thought it was important to just address it rather quickly here. And then let everybody get back to football, because I know how much our fans really hate it when we get off the subject of football. By the way, Star Wars, I won't say anything.
I was about to disconnect. I haven't seen it yet.
All right. Now I'm really off. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. All right, this is Justin here now with Andy, the Dolphins superfan, to give us some Dolphins perspective. We heard a bunch from Rob about the Bills and kind of his thoughts on the game, but why don't you talk to me a little bit about this game? I know this is one where, coming off of last week, you were hoping to sort of maintain that momentum. Didn't really go that way, so what are your thoughts on this one?
You know, Tyrod Taylor did what he does against us every time. It's amazing. So he's only started 40 games in the NFL. So when you've started only 40 games overall, a five-game sample size of incredible play, that's basically 12% of your career starts. That's enough to spike his statistics. And that's exactly what the Dolphins do to Tyrod Taylor. We spike his stats. You look at his play against us over those five starts versus the 35 starts against the other teams in the NFL. I mean, he's a right-handed Michael Vick, a better version of a right-handed Michael Vick against us. And, like, pretty comfortably a below-average quarterback against pretty much everyone else. So it's just very frustrating how we can't stop him. You look at some of the numbers this game, you know, we actually outgained them by 30 yards. You know, now a lot of that has to do with the three turnovers that gave him short fields. Jay Cutler, by the way, he is just awful. He fumbled the ball four times today, and we recovered all four of them. That's, like, pretty remarkable when you think about it. The game should have been even uglier than it was. To be honest, the game was not as close as the final score indicated. Like, we technically lost by only one score, and we actually had the ball, but that was because we recovered a lucky onside kick to even make it that. Very, very ugly game. The only bright spot, honestly, is Kenyon Drake.
Yeah, I wanted to mention Kenyon Drake. He continues to be, like, he makes you forget about Jay Ajayi. I mean, 16 carries, he had 78 yards and a touchdown, averaged almost 5 yards per carry. I mean, if you don't have a quarterback who is trying desperately to give the ball to the other team on every play, you can win games with that kind of production out of the backfield. So why does he continue to be so effective?
Because he's just an incredible athlete. I mean, he's incredibly fast. He's probably a better running back overall than Jay Ajayi. And frankly, our offensive splits with and without Ajayi this year are really stark. I think we're like a top half of the league offense in terms of total yardage and DVOA since trading him, which is weird to think about because you think we've struggled all year. And like we have, we've struggled with turnovers, but we've been moving the ball and scoring points. Ajayi is better suited to be a modern day running back, you know, or he's not, or Kenyon Drake is rather. Ajayi just doesn't have the hands. He doesn't pass block. He's not really into it. And pass blocking is really all about effort in terms of, you know, guys. Some guys are more willing than others to just get hit in the teeth by linebackers running at them full speed. And that's not their fault. And, you know, not everyone's built to pass block like that, like psychologically. So he's a bright spot going forward. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens next year because there's two ways you could look at this game. You could look at this game, okay, we fumbled four times. And we still lost. We were lucky to even be in the game. And another kind of vein of that is, well, we recovered an onside kick, and that's the only reason we were in the game. So we were lucky to even be in, and it should have been a blowout. But the other way to look at the game, the more positive way, is to say, wow, we lost the turnover battle 3-0, and we still lost by only one score. If you think about it, that's kind of ridiculous to think about. And we also outgained them, as I said, by 32 yards. So I don't think the Bills are that good either. And frankly, Tyrod isn't that good. He just looks great against us. Nothing we could do about it.
Well, there you have it. One more time. Bills victorious over the Dolphins in a game that didn't look close, then became close. So, Andy, I appreciate you taking the time. Good luck next week.
Yep. Later, Dustin.
Hey, it's Neil, your Washington Redskins superfan, here with a superfan of a good team. And it's the New Orleans Saints superfan, Chris. Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
Good, Neil. How are you, sir?
I am. I'm happy. We won, and we were just talking off earlier, saying I would ask you some dumb questions, and you would create intelligence. So here we go, Chris. It's your big chance. You've been waiting your whole life for this moment. Right. What happened then? The New Orleans Saints down there in New Orleans. You won 31-19. Last time I looked at this game, it was something like 17-13 or some sort of 17-10 or something close kind of game. What happened?
Yeah, you know, this game was a lot closer than the score will indicate. The Jets played a really good game for 58 minutes, and then they let Ingram score a 50-yard run at the end to to seal the game. But I mean, the Jets today were the same Jets team we've seen all season. This is a really opportunistic defense that flies around the ball, and they gave the Saints fits. And the Saints didn't seem to have their head in the game as much as you see in the rest of the season. Michael Thomas had two touchdowns called back today. Now, he did end up getting one in the fourth quarter. That was big and helped the Saints pull away. But yeah, it was kind of a frustrating game to watch. You know, even with that 50-yard touchdown run, Ingram only had 74 yards rushing. And I think they held Kamara to about 40 yards as well.
I know we're going to talk about the Saints quite a bit here, but just talk me through. I mean, obviously you've seen the Jets now firsthand. Jets, they strike everybody who's a non-Jets fan or doesn't really watch them as one of the worst teams in the league. And yet here they are at 5-9, playing teams like New Orleans close for considerable periods of the game. What are the Jets doing to get themselves in such a position?
I mean, they're dominating the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And they're not making mistakes on defense. I mean, the one touchdown drive the Jets had today, I think is kind of it's a perfect example of their season. They had the ball for over almost 8 minutes. I think it was like 7 minutes and 50 seconds. And it was just run after run after run. And they just kept chipping away at the Saints and then finally knocked it in.
Mm.
Now, they did lose a lot with McCown. Petty's kind of terrible. But the offensive line is really strong. And then on the flip side of that defensive line, the Saints, you know, I don't think I'm being biased here when I say the running back duo in New Orleans is one of the best in the league. And for the most part, they shut them down. Again, Ingram had about 74 yards rushing, and 50 came on one play.
Mm-hmm.
He had 77 yards receiving, and 56 came on one play. So they, for the most part, just play really, really strong defense on both lines, and those linebackers are fast. There's not a lot of name recognition in that linebacking core, but they're quick and they fly to the ball.
Hmm. And Bryce Petty, you had a chance to see him. I'm looking at his figures now. He was just a whisker under 50% completions, 179 yards, so not the greatest yards per average. Touchdown, a couple of picks. Did he show any signs there you thought he could be somebody to work with going forward?
You know, it was hard to tell. The Jets really didn't do anything to push the ball down the field. There was one long play on a wheel route to the running back McGuire, and he got him about 30 yards. But that's about it. I mean, quick slants, quick hitches, but it's kind of hard to judge off of that.
Mm. Now, after a few good weeks for Robbie Anderson, did the Saints put a plan in place for him? Was it Lattimore on Anderson, or did he move around?
It was Lattimore on Anderson, and I have to look at the stats, but I think this might be the most yards given up by Lattimore on the season.
Well, Anderson had five receptions for 40 yards, 8 yards a pop, but that was just pretty low for his season, so...
Yeah, I mean, to put that in comparison, though, I think Lattimore only gave up 3-40 to Julio Jones.
Mm, that's right, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, this Anderson looked good. He's really fast in and out of his breaks, and there were a couple times that Lattimore was giving him a little too much cushion, I think, to respect the speed.
Mm, mm. Okay, let's look at the Saints then and just pick out a few either high points in the game or players you want to identify as, to give them a bit of a shout-out for their play today.
Cam Jordan. How this guy is not being voted into the Pro Bowl yet is beyond me. He had 5 batted passes today at the defensive end position, and I think 4 of them run third down, if I remember correctly. So the guy, even if he can't get to the quarterback, he's still finding a way to make plays. He's the MVP of the game. Kamara got in the end zone. He's back. He's still continuing to have an impressive rookie season. Lattimore had another interception. I still, you know, call me biased or not, I still think the Saints have the offensive and defensive rookie of the year between Lattimore and Kamara. And, you know, it was just kind of a, a bland Saints offense today. A lot of that was the Jets. Kind of felt like the Saints were looking ahead to Atlanta next week a little too much. But this is a very vanilla offense that I've not seen a play calling this bland in a long time.
I'm looking at the stats here. Nothing outstanding. A lot of fairly safe looking throws from Breeze. He was 26 of 36, 285 yards, a couple of touchdowns, and an interception. You had 120, 130 yards on the ground mainly from your two main guys, Ingram and Kamara. Michael Thomas got his catches, but yeah, it looks like maybe not doing a lot in this game. Kind of waiting for next week's big game.
Yep, that's the big one. That should be for the NFC South next week. So, looking forward to it.
So, at the moment, your record is what then? You up to 10-4 or so now?
Yes.
10 win season. Sure. Is that where you thought you'd be at the start of the year, Chris?
I mean, at what point in the beginning? Because once the Saints lost the first two, I think I was saying six. No, I mean, it's. I think 10 wins is what I projected the Saints at, so I'm surprised they're already there.
So now you're the third seed, I believe, in the playoff picture as it stands. 10-4, are you guaranteed a playoff spot now, or are you still
no.
Possible? Who's still?
Carolina took care of business today.
They did?
So they're also 10-4. And Carolina beat the Packers, and then you have Atlanta playing on Monday night. I'm sorry, in Tampa, and they're only a half game back. So the NFC South, it's very possible the Saints could drop the next two games and not make the playoffs.
And it's also very possible that Atlanta, New Orleans, and Carolina could all make the playoffs. At the moment, as it currently stands, they're all in.
Right.
And I could just. On another note, Chris, you know, as exciting as the Saints and Jets game obviously was, I am sitting here watching Red Zone, and the Rams are beating the Seahawks 34-0 in Seattle. Has anybody found out? Is Justin okay? Do we need to talk him down off a ledge, do you think?
Go back to this time last year, and if I would have told you that the Saints and the Rams We're locking up playoffs. Each 10-win teams this time of year, you would have thought I was crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Those Rams are just, wow, sensational. Maybe the favorites now in the NFC. Who knows?
I think it's hard to pick against them.
Yeah. So, New Orleans, your last two games of the season, Atlanta next week, and you finish off what, Carolina?
Tampa. No, the Saints Tampa. Swept Carolina.
Okay, so are you home to Tampa, or...? Let's have a look at this.
I honestly think it's on the road. We're home against Atlanta.
Let's have a look. Week 17, and we have New Orleans at Tampa Bay.
Yeah, final I think that was in Tampa.
Game of the season. But next week, you've got the home game against the Falcons, and no doubt we'll have a preview of that coming up next week. Hey, Chris, another win. Congratulations as you roll on towards the playoffs. Exciting times with that great draft class you've got, and of course your future Hall of Fame quarterback. Good luck for your last two games.
I appreciate you, Neil. Take care.
Cheers. See you, Chris.
So the Jets traveled to New Orleans this week, where they picked up a 31-19 loss. And with that result, whatever faint playoff hopes the Jets had are officially extinguished. Surprising that they were still in it this late in the season, but it's going to be 7 years in a row with no New York Jets in the playoffs. The game itself, 12-point loss. The score is actually a little deceptive, I think, in this case. The Jets gave up a late rushing touchdown to the Saints when they were really just trying to ice the clock, run things out with under 2 minutes. So it was actually a closer game than the score indicates, which is surprising. Jets were supposed to, they were 16-point underdogs going in. So for them to have this result was really good, I think. Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram were really doing a number on the Jets' defense in the first quarter, and it really looked like the game was just going to get out of hand and the Saints were going to run away with it. But the defense did a nice job adjusting. Obviously, New Orleans Saints still got theirs. But the defense really kind of surprised me with how they were able to change up their attack, you know, change up the game plan and be more effective in limiting the Saints' offense. You know, Leonard Williams had that amazing interception, first of his career. Buster Screen played like a man possessed, causing two fumbles. It was really nice showing from the defense in that regard, you know, winning the turnover battle, especially after they lost it last week. What really hurt the Jets, though, was that off those three turnovers, they only generated a total of 3 points. You know, Bryce Petty, he got the start this week with McCown injured. He really had his chance to kind of show the team what he has and if he's, you know, can be part of the future. But he didn't have an impressive showing. You know, wasn't really able to move the ball outside of one drive in the second quarter where they really relied on the running game to get them down and do most of the heavy lifting for that one. His limitations really showed. He had some accuracy issues, missed open receivers, didn't play well. Not a good game by Petty. And so now the Jets are going to head up home, play the Chargers next week. It's going to be the second of 3 consecutive games against really Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Drew Brees, Phil Rivers, and to end the season, Tom Brady. And so we'll see how the Jets respond, if they can, you know, have a similar game as it did against the Saints. And, you know, it's kind of weird to say this, but this was a good loss for the Jets. It really was. You know, last week they came out and were just completely flat against Denver, really got, you know, kind of got blown out in that game. And, you know, Muhammad Wilkerson, you know, getting suspended before the game's deactivated by Bowles, which I think was the right call. But, you know, there was really an opportunity for a big letdown, for this game to be a lot uglier than it was for the Jets. But they rallied. You know, they really came together and played a very good football game. You know, they lost. They were expected to lose. I thought they were going to lose. I just didn't think they would have as good of a showing as they did. You know, if McCown had been in there and, you know, he's able to produce something off those 3 turnovers, I could be having a very different take on this. And, you know, extolling the virtues of a victory by the Jets. But as it was, you know, they were an onside kick recovery away from, you know, being able to beat the Saints, which was amazing, you know, if you really think about it. So hopefully they go into these next 2 games with, you know, the same sense of purpose they had coming into this game. Because I think if, you know, hopefully they can win one. I think if they win one, that'll really secure Bowles' standing in the organization. You know, he'll be back for next year. But I think if they have two similarly, you know, respectable showings against the Chargers and the Patriots, which are games that I don't expect them to win. And I don't think most people around the league expect the Jets to win. So if they can just come out and play a good game like they did against the Saints, I think, you know, and the team rallies around Bowles, I think that'll show ownership that Bowles is the guy to continue with the Jets and lead them into the next season and beyond, which is be good because I like Bowles. I think he's a good coach. I think he's the right guy for that job. Players really seem to like him. So hopefully the Jets don't have a big letdown in these next 2 games, and I'll be talking about Bowles at the start of next season.
All right, this is Justin. I'm here with Ryan, the Jacksonville Jaguars superfan. Ryan, your team continues to be very, very impressive. This week, you took on the Houston Texans, beat them 45-7, which thankfully is the largest margin of victory this week. My Seahawks lost by the next largest, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about you. Dude, what in the world did you do to those poor Texans?
Oh, man, I am doing like air guitar strokes all day. I'm just, we're in the playoffs. In the playoffs. I know we're going to talk about the game, but the Jags are in the playoffs, first time in 10 years. What do we do to the Texans? Blake Bortles is playing on fire and threw 3 touchdowns today. And the defense held him to 7 points. You got TJ Yates back there. So it wasn't like it was too tall of a task, but still, you know, an NFL team and they got DeAndre Hopkins who made a couple DeAndre Hopkins catches in this game. You know, wasn't a 10 sack performance or anything like that, but it was just completely holding them down. They The yardage was out of control. I didn't see how it ended up, but the yardage was out of control in favor of the Jaguars for a lot of it. So basically, Jags are doing anything they want on offense, and the Texans can't do a darn thing. And that's why we end up with 45-7.
Yeah, Blake Bortles, 21 of 29, 326 yards, three touchdowns, passer rating of 143.8. You know, for most of the year, everybody's been talking about how terrible Blake Bortles is. That's, what, three very strong games in a row right there? He seems to be rounding into shape just at the right time of year.
This is going to be a really easy game for you, but let's play Name the Quarterback. Are you ready?
Yes.
This quarterback in December has 903 yards, seven touchdowns, and zero interceptions, and his team is 3-0. Name the quarterback.
Boy, any year except this year, I'd say Russell Wilson, but who is Blake Bortles?
Blake Bortles is correct. It's Blake Bortles. That's averaging 300 yards a game, and he's got seven touchdowns in those games. He's throwing the ball well, moving in the pocket. Still seems like he's making pretty good decisions, which is one of the biggest things as far as he goes. And December has just been impressive. And you know, the other side of the ball, Calais Campbell gets two more sacks to extend his franchise record total by two. You know, just a few more sacks for Jacksonville, holding the team to 7 points and scoring 45.
Yeah, so Blake Bortles has a career completion percentage of about 59. Mm. Over these last three games, it's 70. Jacksonville has not scored less than 30 points this month. Also, we're starting to get late in the month. On top of that, you mentioned Calais Campbell. I mean, two sacks, two tackles for loss. We said it before. I think he's the best free agent signing of the entire offseason for any team. That defense, I was talking to Pod earlier. He doesn't want to see you guys in the postseason. I don't think anybody wants to face that defense in the postseason.
Oh, I agree. And speaking of Pod, I was the biggest Steelers fan today, because if the Steelers won and the Jags went out, they're the two seed. There's still plenty that could happen. And I agree that our defense is going to be tough to face, but it would have been nice to see the Patriots in Everbank Field. That would have been even more comforting. But yeah, I think everyone's got to take this team for real, including myself. Like, the defense can beat any team. It's just got to be rounded out by good play by the offense. And Blake Bortles so far is showing that. And this is big boy, big time football in December. And now I'm just hoping they can do it in January.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you saw, it was a BS call that robbed the Steelers of that, and basically robbed you guys of the two seed. And your schedule coming up.
Oh, I saw.
Who do you have? Like, who's coming up?
Oh, for the Jaggies? Yeah. We got at Jimmy Garoppolo next week. Sort of interesting, you know? And then the last game is the battle at the Titans. And we have
so that's
wait.
A win. Yeah, so, I mean, you're
love it.
You're gonna win out. So yeah, you got job by the refs and by the Patriots, as is typical.
That's right. Conspiracy. Right.
It is. All right. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna cut you off because I haven't done that in a while, but since you just asked me for my final thoughts, I guess I won't do that. Let's talk about, well, first we should mention Keelan Cole, 7 for 186 yards and a touchdown. Man, undrafted rookie playing well. But the guy I want to talk about is, I still have no idea if it's Jaden or Jadon Mickens for the Jaguars. This guy was not on the team when the season started. He gets a punt return touchdown. I don't remember what week, a few weeks back. And I remember thinking, like, he didn't look all that impressive on the return to me. And I thought he would be cut a few weeks later and we'd have like a new punt returner and life would just kind of move on. But no. He had a huge punt return last week. And on offense, Marquise Lee gets hurt early on in this game. And we're down to, let me not lose my point on Mickens. Anyway, Mickens scores two touchdowns in this game. So I'm really happy for that guy. I take back anything I ever thought about him after he scored a touchdown. I don't know what's wrong with me. This dude is taking my heart. I love this guy. And just one more last point for the game. With Marquise Lee out, including Allen Robinson, if you include him, Allen Robinson, number one, Marquise Lee, number two, Allen Hurns, number three. basically none of them played in this game. And it's just awesome to see the offense still click. So shout out to you, Mickens.
All right, there you have it. Ryan is all about his new friend, Mickey. Jaguars are looking really strong going into the playoffs. Ryan, thank you. Have a good night.
Hey, thank you. You too.
All right, this is Justin. I'm here with Nick, the Chiefs super fan. Nick, your team is finally starting to win football games again. This time, in a really big game, you took on the San Diego Chargers, who were looking like they were starting to make a play for this division. But you beat them this week. So why don't you just take us through this game?
Well, I mean, it went very much the way that I think Ken and I previewed it, or at least I previewed and expected this to go. I mean, it actually wasn't even all that different from the week three meeting between these two teams. The fact is that, yes, the Chargers have been rattling off some wins, but I've been saying all along, I mean, they're basically fool's gold. They were beating up on some this lesser competition. And yes, Rivers didn't throw an interception for four games, and he threw a bunch of touchdowns against bad defenses. But okay, fine. Like, he also hasn't won in Arrowhead in like 5 years. And, you know, Alex Smith's record against Philip Rivers, as much as, you know, quarterback wins are a stat, you know, I mean, he's now 8-2. And again, it was also a game of just the Chiefs finally getting back to what they were doing at the beginning of the season that has worked so well. They got Kareem Hunt going. They really tried to ride him throughout the game. I think he ended up with over, I think it was 209 total yards, most of those on the ground, about 150 on the ground. But I mean, the real thing here was just, I mean, Alex Smith was good. Kareem Hunt was great. And Marcus Peters, as I predicted, was fantastic. I mean, it really was Marcus Peters that took over this game with two interceptions and a forced fumble. And you know, the points the Chiefs got off of those turnovers in the second half really were the difference in this game. This was fairly tight going into the, even probably at the halfway mark of the third quarter. The Chargers had a slim lead going into half. But it just felt like a game that the Chiefs really had control of nonetheless. I mean, they were able to continue their drives for the most part. They're probably settling for too many field goals, but then it was just the turnovers. Is that I think as Rivers got a little more desperate to try to get something going, he got a little more wild. And as I mentioned, you know, previewing this game in the battle, I think Darrelle Revis is quietly really important to this team just because him being there, just being solid, not being great, not being the Revis of old, but just being a solid cornerback and a serviceable guy on that side of the field means that the Chiefs don't have weak cornerbacks and weak openings on that end. And that forces teams to have to start looking back Marcus Peters' way. And when you do that, you get picked. That's just what happens.
So Marcus Peters obviously has been in the doghouse of late. Is this enough to redeem him? Are we... And it's not that long ago we were talking about whether he's even going to be on the team next year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you could come back from this sort of thing any better than he did. And by all accounts, he sort of did the right thing through his week of suspension. You know, he, you know, a lot of this came from stuff he did sort of off the field after that game. Apparently, he sort of has a sort of an altercation with a coach, and he's been apparently very apologetic and recognizes he did wrong and all that kind of stuff. And again, he came out and just played fantastic. And even some of the things that, you know, sort of the on-the-field things that the Chiefs have been worried about. I mean, not only did he not have any personal fouls or anything like that, but, you know, he'd been sort of straying from contact a little bit in, you know, this season. And he definitely showed he was not afraid of that. He made some good solo tackles at the sticks to prevent, you know, third down conversions and stuff this game. I think his head is back in it. And you know, look, I mean, I think you can make the case. I mean, he'd be – you know, great trade asset, you know, the Chiefs could probably get a lot for him, but absolutely, you know, the best scenario here is we can figure out a way to keep him happy and on the team and in a way that he's also not being a problem. That's absolutely, you know, the best outcome here. And look, if he's going to be this fired up for the rest of the season, into the playoffs, it's going to be great.
So your next two games, you've got the Dolphins and the Broncos, two very, very winnable games. What is your playoff situation looking like right now? Do you have a sense for where you're going to seed in potentially?
So I think probably the way it goes is I don't think we can get any better than the fourth seed. I don't think we can get any worse. I think we, you know, I think 10-6 still is maybe not even enough. I mean, if we were to somehow lose the division at this point, which is almost impossible. I think we might even not even get a wild card. I mean, we'd have to be 8-8 at that point. So basically, the Chiefs are almost locked in at the fourth seed, with the Raiders losing today. Spoiler alert, depending on how you edit this. Basically, the Chiefs, if the Chargers lose one of their last two games, the Chiefs don't even need to win another game for the rest of the season. They could finish 8-8 because of their tiebreakers over the Raiders and the Chargers and still go into the playoffs as the fourth seed. So they're pretty much on a glide path at this point. I mean, and also if they get just one win, if they beat either the Dolphins or the Broncos, they clinch it automatically. So, you know, they're pretty much getting ready for that. And because I think that there's not a whole lot of ways they can improve their draft position, what a lot of Chiefs fans are going to be talking about is there's going to be some opportunity to see some Pat Mahomes.
I'm sure many Chiefs fans would be very interested in that, yourself included, if there's nothing to play for. Does Andy Reid rest his starters if he's got stuff locked up?
Well, Alex Smith has not played in week 7, I think, 2 or 3 out of his 5 years in Kansas City. And sometimes, at least one of those times, he actually had a severe injury. He, lacerated his spleen or something, I think, right before the game. But there was, I think it was maybe 2013, the team just had no chance of improving the draft stock, so they went ahead and sat him. And I think there's one other time where he was maybe a little banged up, but they're going into the playoffs, and it was just whatever, we'll rest him. And so it wouldn't surprise me if Alex Smith is sitting in week 17. It's sort of interesting, though. I mean, he's already actually broken basically all of his career numbers. He's tied, I think, now his career touchdown record, in a single season. He's already over his yardage record. I mean, so on a personal level, you'd think he'd kind of like to stay in there and just keep bumping up his stats. I mean, especially in a year where, you know, he's going to be probably out on the open market.
Well, there you go. Chiefs victorious. Looks like things are all but determined for your player positioning. So with that, Nick, I'll let you sign off. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Justin. Always a pleasure.
All right, this is Justin. I'm here with Brian, the Green Bay Packers super fan. Brian, your Packers, as you know, fell to the Carolina Panthers by a score of 31-24. Why don't you just go ahead and tell us what you saw in this game?
It was a fun game to watch, and there was obviously a lot of anticipation with Rodgers coming back from a lengthy injury. Mm-hmm. I thought to rescue our season, but I will say I underestimated how rusty he was going to be coming back. He threw 3 picks today. It's the first time he's done that since 2009. And I'll say,
that's like a season's worth of picks for him.
Yeah, right. When you watch the picks that he threw, too, it wasn't bad decisions. It was underthrows on all of them. So I think he just didn't necessarily have the same, feel for where he needed to place those balls. If he puts them where he needs to, there's at least 2 touchdowns and maybe 3. And obviously the score is looking a lot differently than it did. So we got down early and pretty much abandoned the run, which I talked about in the preview as being one of the real nice things about the Green Bay Packers 2017 season, was we found a couple of decent running backs. And I thought that, with Rodgers coming back from that injury, that we'd try to lean on the run a little bit more, and maybe we would have, but the score sort of dictated otherwise today. So tough loss for Green Bay. On defense, man, we're not very good. If we miss the playoffs this year, which I think is looking pretty likely, I think we need to make some major changes on that side of the ball, starting with Dom Capers. I'm tired of putting up with the mediocrity. I was willing to look past it as long as we were winning, but that's not the case right now. So get some fresh blood in there, some fresh ideas, and see if we can turn some things around on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I think I've asked you in both the last 2 off seasons about Dom Capers, because I've never been a big Dom Capers believer. But is it him or is it personnel? I mean, I look at that defense. I don't see a lot of stars on that defense.
That's a good point. And it's sort of a chicken or egg argument, because there's certainly an argument to be made that Ted Thompson has not done a good enough job of allocating resources to that side of the ball, and not even allocating resources, because I think it's a crazy number. 12 of our last 14 first and second round picks have been on the defensive side of the ball, and here we are with this bottom third defense in the league year after year. But I don't know. I'm less willing to pull the plug on Ted than I am for Dom. Honestly, like if Ted goes, then you're probably looking at Dom and maybe even Mike going. So we'd have to see. Maybe there's obviously some internal candidates in terms of how our GM search would go. So maybe there's a chance that they would retain one or both of those guys. But yeah, I think it certainly would inject a lot of questions into the Packers' future if that were the case.
Yeah, that took us down a weird rabbit hole. you know, a 7-7 season when Aaron Rodgers has a broken collarbone for most of it. I don't know if you blow up the Green Bay Packers after that. I will say I'm glad you mentioned the running game. Jamal Williams was a big disappointment to my fantasy team. I was thinking exactly what you were thinking, that with, you know, this Rodgers' first game back, they'll just use him mostly on like third down, that sort of thing, and let the running backs carry the day. That didn't happen. Carolina, though, offensively, I mean, you know, I love Christian McCaffrey. He was very productive today, both running the ball and catching the ball. What did you see out of that Carolina offense in addition to just bad defense?
Yeah, he was really good in the first quarter. I think the first drive he had like 8 or 9 touches and scored the touchdown. So he sort of carved us up early, and I think we might have adjusted after that. And then we kind of left the middle of the field exposed for Greg Olsen to really feast. Wide receivers for their team didn't really do a whole lot. Cam made the throws that you would expect him to make. He hit a couple of wide open receivers for scores. And there was one, just I refuse to believe that the touchdown pass to, I think his name is Demir Byrd. They'll be talking about it all week. It ended up getting reviewed. If you watched that play, they were trying to analyze which of his butt cheeks came down first because it was literally that close. And
I was drinking water, and I almost did an actual spit take when you said that.
Yeah, I got up to go like get some food at that point because I'm like, well, there's no way this is going to get overturned. It's an incomplete pass. And then I let out an audible a vulgarity when I heard the expression from the other room. So that was less than positive. The other thing that I think was less than positive today, too, was a pretty blatant targeting hit on Davante Adams again by Thomas Davis. I don't know what it is about him. He just attracts those types of hits, but it was a pretty ugly hit. It's the exact type that the NFL is trying to legislate out of the league. On one of the interceptions Rodgers threw, Adams is looking to make the tackle, and out of nowhere, Thomas Davis lowers the helmet and makes contact with Adams' helmet, and then he was out for a concussion. And you know, I don't know that it necessarily changes the outcome of the game, but I will say that after we recover the onside kick, Geronimo Allison catches a slant pass, and he's the one who ends up fumbling. He's not in the game if Davante Adams is healthy, and so you know, maybe it's just sour grapes for me, but I think I would love to see the NFL come down on Thomas Davis because that's the second time he's gotten pinned for one of those types of hits this year. He had one against Tampa Bay earlier as well, so I think you want to start seeing those types of hits get legislated out of the league, you got to put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, I mean, if it is, as you described, sounds like he's got at least a fine coming for him. So at 7-7, you've got Aaron Rodgers back. Do you still have playoff prospects?
It depends on what happens Monday night. If the Falcons win, we're out. If the Falcons lose, man, we got to throw multiple Hail Marys to get in. I can't even tell you what has to happen at this point. But we needed some magic to happen even to get in were we to win the last three games. So I'm not really expecting a postseason appearance for Green Bay this year. But I am hopeful that we can at least play spoiler to Minnesota. I'm not sure if Rodgers will play next week or not. With very little to play for at this point, coming off of a hastily return from a collarbone injury, I don't know how much you really want to put him out there. But I will say, there's nothing I would love more than to crap on their picnic and maybe lose them home field advantage. And I will say, if Rodgers plays, you know, it's hard to predict a whooping against Minnesota, but I bet we come out guns blazing, considering that they were really the ones who put us behind the eight ball on the season with the injury to Rodgers in the first place.
Well, there you go. Green Bay, once again, falls to the Panthers, 31-24. Brian, have yourself a good night, man.
Thanks. You too, Justin.
All right, Justin here with Josh, our Lions superfan. Josh, you had sort of an odd Saturday game. I guess that's what we do now that the college football season is over. Your Lions were taking on division, I'm not sure if rivals is the right term, but the division foe, the Chicago Bears, coming out victorious 20-10. Why don't you tell us about this game?
Yeah, nice to have a little Saturday football there in the absence of the college football scene, but excellent that the Lions were able to get the win. 20-10 was the final here. Of course, this is a home game for us, and we had already beaten the Bears at Soldier Field, which always proves to be a little bit tougher place to play. But, you know, that was a lot. That was only a field goal margin. This is a game where Stafford came out and the O-line just was kind of out of sync and Slavinson. He had a holding penalty and basically got Stafford killed almost and a lot. And he had a phenomenal game with the way that he's been questionable going into what seems like every single game every week for something different this year. I mean, the myriad of injuries he's been battling, it's been pretty substantial, but he was fantastic in this game. He ended up 25 of 33. He had a couple touchdowns, and the Lions D showed up to play early today, which was key. This team, I've kind of ragged on them for not really coming out ready to play, but Stafford kind of snuck out of a sack early in the game, and that led to the field goal that kind of kicked things off for scoring. And Theo Riddick and Teon Green took most of the work, but one carry. So if that being active and having one carry, if that kind of gives you any indication of what his role in the offense is moving forward, he was out-touched significantly by Teon Green and Theo Riddick. They those two had a combined 18 touches. And they did pretty good, man. I mean, overall, that the lack of a running game, it's still, you know, a part of this offense is the struggle to run. And luckily, the defense, like I said, over Quinn played phenomenal. Darius Slay played out of his mind. The defense, just as a whole, I thought they did an excellent job on all their coverages. They definitely dominated. They made it so that when they got off the field, the Lions dominated time of possession pretty wholeheartedly, and they got in a lot of early targets to Kenny Golladay, which was nice. Kind of he either was forgotten about, or you know, they were just kind of wanting him. They wanted to see a glimpse of that guy that was out there early in the year catching two touchdowns in week one. But I think the highlight everybody saw in this game from yesterday was the Marvin Jones, just unbelievable catch on that 50-50 ball by Stafford. One of the most fantastic catches I've seen all year, I thought. But, Slay gave us a scare early. He left the game, I think, right after that drive. And, Riddick came back in the second half and had an amazing toe tap interception, which I thought was the other major highlight of this game. Ebron, I think, ended up scoring the touchdown on that drive to cap it off. But, overall, Justin, I feel like I'm rambling, but Stafford was just kind of slinging it around out there. Quandre Diggs had a pick, but I know I mentioned that Slay needs to go to the Pro Bowl. It was nice to see. I believe he's the leading NFC vote getter there. But his two touchdowns, 6th and 7th on the year, he's now the leader in the NFL for picks. The Lions look pretty good. I mean, this game was pretty much under control the entire time, and they need to take care of teams like that, especially the lesser teams like the Bears.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the Bears, too. Mitchell Trubisky, 31-46 for 314 yards and a touchdown. That sounds good. Also, 3 interceptions. Okay, that's bad. a lot of the Bears' future right now is hinging on Mitchell Trubisky. What was your observation of him?
Well, he threw the ball a little more when he played us than he typically does ever since he's been put into the starting role, which I do think is the right move. But however, I feel like games like this, there are few and far between where he's taking 40 plus pass attempts. I mean, they need to put him in situations where he's actually going to learn and get better. And I think running a more pass heavy offense. So it doesn't surprise me that we won by holding Jordan Howard in check, but when they only gave him 10 carries and let Trubisky throw 46, I thought that you know, was something where we were definitely prepared to handle it. And we did so very well. Trubisky, Darius Slay mentioned in his post-game interview that he thought that Trubisky was kind of staring guys down. So that's, you know, I mean, that's going to lead to three picks from a rookie quarterback pretty much all the time. The only quarterback I can really compare that to this year would be DeShone Kizer. He just kind of one guy, you know, because he sits in the pocket for so long. But Trubisky, I thought, did a pretty good job as far as, you know, as a whole. He definitely has a lot to learn, and I know John Fox is on his way out, so it's hopefully the next coach can get him, you know, what he needs so that when we watch the Bears, we're actually getting a more competitive game.
All right, so with that win, that brings your record to 8-6. What is your playoff scenario looking like going forward?
Well, we cannot win the division. The Vikings took care of business Sunday. They stomped the Bengals, so that was never close. We get the Bengals next, and I fully expect us to win. But, you know, I mean, I think it's going to take 10 wins to get in the NFC. You know, I said that last week. I'll stick by that. The NFC is just too loaded right now, as you know, Justin. So, I mean, we're going to have to win those last two games just to get a road game. And unfortunately for Lions fans, as they remember last New Year's Eve, the division came down to Aaron Rodgers coming to town. And I just hate that scenario of New Year's Eve Ford Field, but last year it didn't turn out so good.
Yeah. Yeah. So once again, Lions victorious 20-10. Really interesting division you've got there this year. And we've got the same record. So it's a fight to the finish. Let's move on to the next game. We're going to do a bit of a review roundup right now. I want to talk to you a little bit about the Ravens and the Browns. So here's another division matchup, which this time of year we're used to. They kind of like cram them all into this space. Rams extend the Browns' winless streak. They're at 0-14 on the season. They lost 20. The Ravens won 27-10. I know that this is a game that you were paying attention to as well. So why don't you give us kind of your initial thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, they ripped off the scoring in this game. And I mean, the final score, you know, 17-point victory, they won 27-10. But I mean, the game was, and there was a couple games like this today, and this was one of them where the game really, it was never really good. Cleveland was driving early in the game, and I believe it was right at the end of the first quarter, and Eric Weddle, Kizer, that kind of killed some of the momentum that they had. And they, you know, I believe right after that, you know, they got backed up. They had another drive going. I think they had penalties. And I mean, every time that it seemed like they got going, they shot themselves in a foot, curled around to kind of get them into the red zone. They were, I think, 35 yard line, something like that. And, they just couldn't capitalize on anything all day. And I thought that the Ravens defense for the most part played pretty solid. And the one surprise though, I'll be honest with you, is I didn't think Alex Collins would be held in check like he was. The Browns have kind of been getting smashed because of game script recently, so teams have been able to run on them. But it's, you know, it's something where their run defense is really pretty good and kind of underestimated. And it still really didn't make a difference in this game, of course, with the Browns falling to 0-14. But overall, I mean, you know, Flacco was, he wasn't great, but I mean, they converted more when they needed to. Justin Tucker is always a huge weapon. I mean, it's like the Ravens get 6 points automatically off his leg every game. So game was pretty close going into the half, but it was just, I mean, Ben Watson scored the touchdown. I mean, you kind of knew that it was going to be hard for the Browns to come from behind. I don't honestly think they've done so to win it. They obviously haven't won a game all year. So it's, when you get them down, I mean, you got to keep them that way. And that's pretty much what they did.
Yeah. The things that I was really interested in was DeShone Kizer. You know, I'm always interested in these young quarterbacks. He did not have a good game. 20 of 37, only 146 yards, two interceptions, plus he fumbled in what resulted in a Ravens touchdown. So definitely not a good day for him. I thought it was odd that Cleveland only ran the ball 19 times on the day. They seemed to run the ball pretty effectively. You mentioned that long carry by Isaiah Crowell early. On the flip side, Joe Flacco, after struggling a lot for the early part of the year, has started to put together a little run of effective games here. You know, 26 of 42, 288 yards, no interceptions, another touchdown. You know, there's a stretch early in the year where I think he had interceptions in something like six straight games, something absurd like that. He's playing better. Their defense is solid. Alex Collins didn't run well today, but for the most part, he's been effective, and the running game has been good. This team suddenly has a bit of an identity, which I think they lacked early in the year. Now at 8-6, they're technically in seventh place, but ahead of them, you've got the Bills and the Titans. The Titans are playing poorly. The Bills, you never know what's going to happen with them. These Baltimore Ravens that we were all so down on early in the year might actually be a playoff team before long. Do you think if they do make it to the playoffs that they can, you know, make a little bit of noise, do some damage in there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we saw a team, you know, we saw this team do this, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago? And, of course, Flacco was rewarded with that at the time, the massive contract. But, yeah, I mean, all he has to do, pretty much like you said, Justin, he's kind of been on a run lately. He just kind of needs to do what he's doing right now. He's not being ultra efficient. I hate to throw the phrase game manager around there. I think it gets overused personally, but it's kind of what he's doing, you know? So it's basically when you're throwing for almost 300 and a touchdown like you did today, and then you have a defense that's as strong as they are, that defense knows that they can win a Super Bowl because they are that tough. Of course, they lost Jimmy Smith. They've been kind of bleeding some points to perimeter receivers lately, but case in point, you mentioned the fumble in the end zone. I mean, that's just Kizer again, holding on to the ball too long. I believe Brandon Williams just fell on that one. You know, there's 6 points and then boom, there you go. You know, and it's in the game was never in question. And they can do that to somebody in the early round of the playoffs. But of course, you know, they're going to have to probably go to Pittsburgh or New England and win somewhere like that. And that's where the true test is going to come.
All right. And finally, we alluded to this game earlier. Minnesota Vikings blow out the Cincinnati Bengals 34-7. The Minnesota Vikings, I believe with how everything went today, clinched their division. Case Keenum, listen to this, 20 of 23. That's not bad. this is another game that I know you were watching. So why don't you give us your thoughts on the Vikings over the Bengals?
Yeah, this was another game, even more so than the Ravens and Browns, but even more, this was even more so a case of that this game was never really in question. I mean, yeah. Minnesota came out early. They were assertive on defense. They were aggressive. You just mentioned there were 25 pass attempts in this game and 5 incompletions. Two of those were from Teddy Bridgewater. Case Keenum was just the man, and this guy continues to play at just an incredible level. And when you're only throwing 3 incompletions, and I mean, you're talking about, you're replacing a guy that was just the most accurate and last year set a single season record for that in Sam Bradford. And for him to come out and perform the way he's done, and, you know, I don't want to say he's put the team on his back, because his team has really just phenomenal depth. And I've been scared of this team since last year. And you have guys like Keenum stepping up. Latavius Murray, he's not a stud. A lot of people may have mistaken him for one in Oakland, but I think a lot of that was due to the incredible offensive line play he got the last couple years. But Latavius Murray has stepped up in place of Dalvin Cook. And some people don't even realize, like, yeah, they lost their man at running back. Like, he was the guy. And so you're rolling with Keenum, Murray, then the receiving core of Diggs and Thielen. This team is phenomenal, and the defense was fantastic today. They scored a touchdown. They had a pick six. I believe that was Kendricks that had the pick six early. This game was – they had a 17-point lead at the end of the first quarter, and they went into halves 24-0. So, yeah, this is a dumpster fire for the Bengals, and I thought what was – the interesting storyline here, in my opinion, Justin, was right before the game. You probably saw this as well. Just somehow it just kind of gets out there. There's like this, there's a subtle announcement that Marvin Jones is pretty much out after this year, which Marvin I know Lewis. It's not a surprise, but yeah, Marvin Lewis, that Marvin Jones, of course, my Detroit Lions wide receiver who made the awesome catch on Saturday,
he's not out.
Former Bengal, former Bengal and former player for Marvin Lewis, but
and you caught the report afterwards that Lewis has like tendered his resignation, that he is not coming back. Man, he's been there for what, 15 years, 7 playoff appearances, 0 playoff wins.
I just don't get it, man. I thought he should have been gone probably like a good 5-6 years ago, but. Yeah, they've made the playoffs, but it's, like you said, they're like the Lions, man. I mean, they haven't won playoff games, and that's what's really important. And when you're the second most tenured coach behind Bill Belichick, but you've only had, literally zero success compared to him in the postseason, it's hard to believe he was even around this long.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, Cincinnati, it's so weird. I mean, it's not that many years ago where they were looking like the best team in the league, and they were so young, and they had so much depth. Andy Dalton looked like he was going to be a really good football player for a long time. He completed half of his passes for 2 interceptions. Had a QBR, if you're a QBR guy, of 2.5. Had a passer rating of 27.3. I believe if you're like 0 for 5, with no completions, you have a pass rating of like 40. I think I read somewhere that if he just spiked the ball in the dirt on every play, he would have had a higher passer rating.
Like that. Yeah, I saw that on Twitter.
Oh, that's how useless he was. Man, I mean, I thought it was nice to see Teddy Bridgewater in a game because it's been such a long road back for him. He hasn't thrown a pass since 2015. Obviously didn't go well, 0 for 2 with an interception, but it's good to see him on the field. Shout out to James, our Texans fan. I was trying to decide who to start at running back. He was like, man, just go with Latavius Murray. He'll be steady. He'll probably get you some yards and a touchdown. Dude nailed that exactly. So shout out to James. So these Minnesota Vikings, is any team in the NFL playing better than them right now?
You know, it's hard to say, anybody other than the Patriots, which you could argue after their loss to Miami, you could scratch them off. So, I would say, honestly, the Vikings and the Rams have looked the sharpest, in the last 4 or 5 weeks. The Rams, of course, have lost recently. But the Vikings getting beat by a playoff caliber team as well as the Rams. I believe they got beat by the Eagles. Vikings got beat by the Panthers. Murray, they've been giving him the pill a lot, and he's been getting it done. And with Keenan being so efficient, they know they can rely on this defense. And I feel bad for him. You mentioned fantasy. Hey, don't forget your boy said to start Latavius as well. But AJ right. Green, man, I hope nobody had him out there. I was already eliminating the league. I had he came up super small, 2 for 30. I mean, ouch. The only reason they even scored today was that Teddy Bridgewater interception. It was just like his first pass that he threw. I think it got batted or it went off somebody's shoulder pad. They picked it off and. Yeah, they were already, I think, in field goal range when they intercepted it. So Gio kind of snuck one in there to cap that off. But that's the only reason they even scored today.
Yeah, I mean, listen to this. So they've scored at least 30 points in five of their last seven games. They've held half of their opponents in their last six games to single-digit points. I mean, I look at them right now, and I don't know if I'm totally believer-based just because, Case Keenum, obviously we've never seen him in the playoffs. But right now it looks to me like you basically got the Jaguars defense and the Eagles offense before Wentz went out. They are so strong all around, at least to me. I feel like they're the best team in the NFL at the moment.
Yeah, they're fantastic. I mean, I saw Case Keenum when he played for the Rams last year come to Ford Field and throw for like 380 and three touchdowns, like it was nobody's business. And
just how terrible Jeff Fisher is.
Oh yeah, I can't even. Like I read a hilarious article and it was like, we'll never know the unspeakable crimes against football that Jeff Fisher, had, because they were talking about Case Keenum and about
Goff and Gurley.
Oh yeah, he's a monstrosity. But I know we're going off on a tangent there. But yeah, I mean, this team's the real deal, and they're not. This isn't just a fluke. I mean, they're going to have Dalvin Cook back next year, so their running game. Oh my goodness. I mean, I hate that they're in the Lions division.
Yeah. So, oh man, good stuff, man. Football season. I'm sad that we're. I mean, I'm glad that we're coming up in the playoffs, but I'm sad it's going to end soon because this is so much fun to talk about. Josh, I really appreciate you having me cover these late games and go into depth on all of these. Man, good stuff. Good luck to your Lions.
Yeah, absolutely, Justin. Always happy to kind of stick around and talk some football. Overall, I thought it was a great slate of NFL games today, and always happy, like I said, to pop in and do some recaps, bud. Thanks again.
That's going to do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review. That goes a long way towards helping other people find the show. You can like us, share us, follow us on Twitter. That's at NFU Podcast. You can email us. We would love to hear your thoughts, read them on the air. If you want to chime in on your own favorite team, please do so. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also check out our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. We're getting near the end of the pick'em season. I am doing terrible at that. But I believe Jay and James, our Texans fan, are battling out for the top spot. As always, make sure to check out our sponsor too, Harry's Razors. That's harrys.com/nextfanup. Oh, man. Big week. Big week's coming up. Getting near the end of the season, all of this stuff matters a whole lot right now. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.